Mindfulness isn't some softy thing. Rather, it sharpens your focus. It sharpens your edge. It's going to give you a competitive advantage as opposed to making you tap out of life.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Today, as a guest, I have Michael O'Brien. How are you, Michael?
I am awesome, Brad. I'm with you.
Talk
about
some really
cool stuff. So a great way to end the year.
Heck yeah, it's going to be an amazing conversation. So as I always do, I like to just jump right into the meat of the conversation. Michael, when was your last bad day and how did a bike accident turn into a transformative experience for you?
Well, a great way to start. So my last bad day, as I call it, was July 11th, 2001. I was out for a training bike ride at a company offsite meeting and a SUV, Ford Explorer, traveling about 40 miles an hour across the center line of the road and hit me head on. And I remember everything about that morning, Brad, at least the time I was conscious. But I remember the sound of me hitting his grill and into the windshield. I went, the screech of his brakes and it's still with me. It doesn't haunt me, but I can definitely hear all those sounds. And then I was knocked unconscious. And when I regained consciousness, I was surrounded by EMTs, state troopers, police, ambulance. I was lying there in the worst pain I've ever had in my life. I knew my life was in question or in the balance. I just remember willing myself not to fall asleep because I thought if I fell asleep, I would never wake up again. And they flew me to Albuquerque, the only trauma one center in the state. First surgery went about 12 hours. I needed 36 units of blood product. They saved my life. They saved my leg. And then I was in the ICU for about 4 days and change. The doctors told my wife that had I been 10 years older or not in shape, I would have died before I got to the hospital because I lost so much blood because the femoral artery was lacerated when my left femur shattered.
Oh,
and I broke a whole bunch of everything. I had glass throughout my whole body because I went through the windshield. And bruises and cuts and scrapes, and I ballooned up. I looked like the Michelin tire guy coming off of that first surgery because they had to fill me with so many fluids. And when I came out of the ICU, I learned about my accident. The driver had a revoked license, and I thought this should not have happened. Like, I was arguing with reality. I was angry. I was vengeful. I was scared to death. And on the outside, I tried to put on a happy face. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to make this happen. But deep down inside, I was freaking out in not a good way. But eventually, I got some really great advice. Guy I was talking to, a mentor, said, hey, listen, everything in your life is neutral until you label it. So all the events, Michael, you can give it some space before you choose your label. And you're labeling yourself as a victim right now, but I'm going to offer you up different labels. And I thought about that. And at first, Brad, I was like, what is he talking about? It's like some Yoda Jedi trick. But I sat with it. And how true is that? We label things so quickly in our lives. I was like, I look back on that accident day and I was like, you know what? That's going to be my last bad day. Because the way I look at it, it's not about unicorns and rainbows. It's about knowing that when I have people in my life who I love and love me back, how can I label a full day a bad one? So I've had bad moments and angry moments and sad moments since, but my days are a collection of moments. And so when I get to the end of the day, I'm not going to label it as a bad day because I still have people in my life that I love who love me back. So the day is complicated. It's a bunch of a lot, but a bad one because the people in my life I can partner with, they got my back and I got theirs, and we can turn that into a better tomorrow.
So was the driver drinking or were the drugs involved? Do you have any idea what led him to swerve across the center line to hit you?
Oh, God, that's a $64,000 question, or with inflation, maybe it's a $250,000 question now. So who knows? You know, he said at the time there was a coyote in the road. But I will just say this, as a suburban kid on the East Coast, if there was a coyote out there, I would have seen it and I would have hightailed myself back into the hotel because I was doing this 2-mile loop on the hotel property. I don't think there was any coyote. What I think was happening was that he was speeding to work and he cut the apex of the turn and he wasn't expecting a cyclist to be right there.
Oh my God.
So now they didn't do any type of breathalyzer test. He had 5 DUIs on his record.
That's why
his driver's license was revoked. So he should not have been driving that day. But the police didn't do any type of testing. They didn't think it was necessary based on how he was behaving. I just think he was speeding on the way to work. And here's the funny thing, if you can laugh at it. I can laugh at it now. He was probably going to work to set up for our meeting because we were there in New Mexico in the middle of July and it was a new hotel and we were the only like company that was there. And so he was probably running late to work. And he needed to set up for our meeting, whether it's food and beverage or the meeting space or whatever. And so he's rushing to work like so many people do, like I've done in the past. And he wasn't expecting a cyclist to be there. And he hit me. Now, I will say I was on the far right-hand side of the road. So I was exactly where a cyclist should be. So he was fully in my lane. He took all of it. And even after he hit me and came to a complete stop, 90% of his vehicle was still in my lane. So it wasn't like he hit me and swerved. He hit me and sort of kept going until he stopped.
Wow. So yeah. I love the advice you got about everything in your life is neutral until you label it. I say it differently, but it's pretty much the same thing because I haven't had a bad day in a couple of years. And I don't expect to ever have a bad day again as long as I live, because what is really bad? We label it as bad. I've had so many things, including my divorces, which I thought were bad at the time, that turned out to be complete blessings. So if you miss the opportunity to go on a date tonight or play golf or go to this concert because your car's broken down, well, how do you know that had you gone, something catastrophic might have happened? You'll never know that. So is everything in life just happening for us? That's what I believe. And when you believe that, you can choose to never have a bad day again. So absolutely love it. Everything's neutral until you label it. I did a Facebook post coming back from the gym, like literally 20 minutes ago, that said, what if life was just one big lesson on how to love better?
Oh, wow. That's cool. I like that, man.
And that kind of plays into what you're saying. Like if you have interactions with family and friends who you love and something quote bad happens, which again, I don't think anything bad really does happen to us in our life because I think it's all for us. Then like you said, how can it be a bad day?
Yeah. That whole notion of did it happen to me or happen for me? Initially, my thinking back in those days was it happened to me. But through this awakening, if you will, this opening up my mindset through the accident, I realized it did happen for me. And I look at everything that's happening in my life. Well, how is this happening for me in this moment? And when I talk about having my last bad day, it's not to deny some strong emotions that we feel. Like sometimes we have loss, we're grieving, we're hurting, we have pain. And it's not meant to say, oh, you feel that and spin it right away. Because sometimes you just have to sit with grief. If you've lost a loved one, that takes some time. But even as you're grieving, we can hold space for other emotions like love, like joy, like friendship and happiness. So us humans are pretty incredible creatures. We can hold space for more than one emotion or more than one feeling at the same time. So that's why I say, like, listen, we're living moments and all of our moments are transient. They don't last forever, just like the clouds traveling across the sky. And so I want to be present for all my moments or as many of them as I can, because, you know, I'm human too. I get distracted. So I don't have complete awareness all the time, but I try to work on my awareness, my ability to be present, my mindfulness, so I could take like the full experience in. And then I could be really thoughtful about how I want to look at my moments and my days. And yeah, to your point, if I have love in my life, I can't chalk the day up as a bad one.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, the fact that you survive, Michael, is quite extraordinary, as you've said, and probably all the medical community said. So it's a testament that you were put here for a massive mission. And it sounds like that's what we'll get into in the next couple of minutes. What is your massive mission and how you're living it? So glad that you're here. Glad that you survived. And yeah, just amazing stuff. So you created the Pause, Breathe, Reflect app, right? To help others. How does that app translate the benefits of mindfulness into like actual actionable steps that people can take leading these crazy busy lives that so many of us lead now?
Yeah, I'm glad you said crazy busy, because that's the person I created it for. So going back to when I was in the hospital, my recovery was overwhelming because I had a whole bunch of people telling me what I should do. And when I was in the hospital, all I really wanted was to get back home, to come back to center, if you will, to like your house, like it's your own bed, the smells of your home. Although it was difficult for me to take a shower, just getting in my own shower, getting some rest. Because when you're in the hospital, all I have to say is there's no resting. There's no sleep because everyone's coming in every few hours to poke at you and take your temperature and blood pressure and the whole thing. And
the monitors are beeping at you constantly.
Yeah. You know, and I had IVs all through me. I looked like a mess. And I just wanted to get back home. And as a lifelong athlete, I knew the importance of your breath. Because every time the game got too quick, the coach would always say, take a breath, slow it down. Or when you got hurt, you fell down, people would say, hey, stay down, just breathe. Which is what the EMTs told me when I regained consciousness on that day. So I knew nothing about mindfulness or meditation back in 2001, but I knew enough to come back home to my breath. So I started doing these practices in the morning. So this is 2001, before like morning routines really like got hyped up. And I put myself in my wheelchair. I wheeled myself to a quiet place in the hospital. And I did a box breathing pattern to begin with, just to slow things down so I could set my intentions and how I wanted to show up for the day and my rehab, and also practice gratitude. And that was the beginning. And then I continued with it.
Was breathing something you had been doing throughout your life, or where did the breathing come from?
So the breathing, really, the whole idea of like coming back to your breath really came from my days as an athlete.
Oh, wow.
You know, like I was a pitcher, and if you're in a jam as a pitcher, coach comes out, gives you a little pep talk, and it is a moment to like, hey, catch your breath, like slow it down. It's going to be okay. You got this, right? Or you watch like the NBA or college basketball. What does the free throw shooter do before he or she shoots the ball? Takes a breath, slows right. things down. So I knew that, like in 2001, I knew nothing about breath work. I don't think many of us really did. 2001 is before the internet as we know it, before social media, before TED Talks. But I knew enough to like, if I want to slow things down, I got to find a way to just take a nice, healthy, slow breath in, slow breath out. And that's how I started. And I did this box breathing pattern that sort of comes out of the military, the Navy SEALs and the Marines, to be specific. So that's what I started to do. And I was like, okay, all right, I created some space. And going back to everything's neutral until you label it. So if you can create a little bit more space, you got a little bit more time to work on your labels. And so I did that. And eventually I got back home. And fast forward, eventually I got back on the bike again. And I took this practice, but I didn't tell anyone, Brad, I was doing it, back into my corporate life to slow my corporate life down because things were really busy. And I credit mindfulness for helping me get to the executive suite because I was playing the game at a different pace than everyone else. Everyone else was squirreling around on the hamster wheel, reacting. And I felt like my breath work and my meditation helped slow it down so I could respond versus react. And that's so, incredible. Yeah. So I call these little breaks pause, breathe, reflect. So like pause, not necessarily stopping, right? Because I'm still like a pretty active guy. So pause, connect with your breath. And the reflect piece is key because that's where the thoughtfulness comes in. That's where you have some space for gratitude and, hey, how do you want to show up next? What do you want to say or do next? And that's key. It's a chance to journal. If you like to journal, it's just a chance to be contemplative and thoughtful and reflective. And I built the app because what I found is I left my corporate life in 2014. So everything I talk about, I pressure tested it in the corporate arena. But I left in 2014. And what I found is that a lot of people like, yeah, meditation, maybe it's getting more accepted now than in 2014. It was really quite woo-woo back then still. Now people are a little bit more open to, okay, I've heard about it. There's some popular apps out there, but I don't have time to do this. Like my morning is crazy. I got to get the kids off to school. I got to get to work. I got a million and one things to do. And so what I've done is made mindfulness really practical and relatable. And what I say is like, listen, hey, Brad, if you don't have 10 minutes in the morning, we're good. But I bet you have five times throughout the day where you have 2 minutes to slow things down and come back to your breath. So I share with people, I'm like, I want my 10 minutes in five chunks throughout the day. Because I know a lot of people who meditate or do yoga in the morning, but they don't take their practice off the mat or cushion and weave it into their day. So they might do it in the morning and check the box. It's transactional. I'm a yogi or I'm a meditator. But by 2 p.m., things start to unravel. And so my feeling is like, let's weave mindfulness. Let's weave the power of our breath throughout our day so the stress doesn't build up, so we can manage it and surf the waves as we go through our day. So we can be thoughtful at 5 p.m., just like we're trying to be thoughtful at 8 a.m.
So, Michael, what is box breathing?
Box breathing is a really simple pattern. It's a great way to start. So it's a simple breathe in for a count of four, you know, two, three, four, and then hold for four. So two, three, four, breathe out for four, and then hold for four. So you're making a box.
Oh, interesting.
So your breath is going away. And it's a great way to start, place some focus. It's a great breath work pattern, and it can help develop concentration and focus. And you just do that for maybe 2 to 3 minutes. You don't have to do it for long, but you just go through that pattern and slow everything down. Meditation has a great way of like easing blood pressure. It can help with a whole bunch of other medical conditions. There's a lot of great clinical research on the value of meditation. And what I tell the people all the time is like, listen, mindfulness isn't some softy thing. Rather, it sharpens your focus. It sharpens your edge. It's going to give you a competitive advantage as opposed to making you like tap out of life. And I know in the internet, sometimes it's portrayed as like you're checking out of life, like you're going totally zen. But really, mindfulness allows you to have that sweet spot between hyper and hypo arousal. So when we're hyper aroused, we're in this react mode, like the cortisol, adrenaline are firing. And when we're hypo aroused, we're leaning way too far back. So mindfulness with a practice can help us find that sweet spot, like that ability to have balance as you surf the waves of life, of stress. So that's what I try to share with people. It's not all about just chilling out. It's about finding something called equanimity, just like that, the general sweet spot of like harmony, and perform there or show up in our relationships there. And it can make for such a beautiful ripple that we can put into the world.
So I guess I've been doing triangle breathing because I breathe in for 4 or 5 seconds. I hold for 4 or 5 seconds. I breathe out and then I start the inhale. So I'm going to add the fourth level after the exhale. I'm going to hold it for however many seconds that I'm doing it. So Michael, when you left corporate America in 2014, why did you leave and what did you do?
Well, so when I was in the ICU, and I don't remember anything, Brad, about the ICU. So I told my wife to buy Amazon stock. I was like, hey, I hear it's a hot company. We should buy some Amazon. So that's 2001. It was going for $15 a share back then. And I also interviewed my wife for a sales rep job for my company because I was in sales and marketing at the time. And I went through the 45-minute interview guide, but I didn't hire her. So, but I also told her, I was like, go find David. And so when I came out of the ICU, she was like, who is David? I was like, why are you asking me this? And she went on to say, you kept on repeating his name to say, go find David. He's going to show us the way. So David Kolb was the first guy I knew as an executive coach in my whole career. I was like, wow. So when she shared that with me, I was like, oh, that's a seed. We just planted that baby. Because here it is, like, of all the people I could mumble to her to say, follow this person, it's an executive coach. So I knew one day I would get into this line of work of executive coaching and helping leaders lead better. And then eventually I became a meditation teacher as well. So I left because I knew like the universe was going to give me a sign. And in 2014, we had a big global restructuring. We're going to go into global business units. And the guy I was working for, who was the president, got kicked out, big shuffle. And I got a new boss, who was a really good man, but I didn't want to work for him. And I was like, okay, the universe has given me that last puzzle piece. It's time. And within 36 hours, I had made the call. And I had been at the company for 18 years. So it was a big deal. So it wasn't easy like thing to pull off in such short order, because I had a team of close to 1,000 people at the peak. But I just knew it was time. I had a good corporate career of 22 years, but I felt a calling to help leaders lead better and prevent these bad moments from turning into a bad day or longer, and share the value of mindset and mindfulness. And it's even more important today than it was back in 2014.
Amazing. So I created this tool called the Joy Regenerator. And ironically, your app, or at least the Pause, Breathe, Reflect, is kind of like the first half of my tool. And let me explain this, as it's pretty cool. You know this, but when you go into a negative emotion, you're stressed, you're feeling anxious, you're feeling angry, sad, whatever it is, you are in a fight or flight. When you're in a fight or flight, your brain is doing exactly what it should be doing. And it's going back to a time in the past where you felt something similar. So you're not living in the present. So your app and my Joy Regenerator, the first thing is pause, breathe, because as you breathe, now you're bringing yourself into the present moment. Your reflect is my label, the emotion. So I'm feeling, I'm feeling sad. You kick out from the fight or flight, the amygdala part of your brain, because you're forcing your brain to think, what am I feeling? You go to the prefrontal cortex. So that's a brain hack. Then you give yourself compassion for that emotion, because most of us as kids didn't get compassion for our emotions. And it's the little kid inside of you that's feeling that anxiety or that sadness. And then I go on to deeper reflection. Where's this coming from? And usually, always, it doesn't have to do with the present situation. If you're arguing with your spouse, it never has to do with the argument at hand. It has to do with you going back to a time in your past, typically in your childhood, when someone made you feel that certain way. So it's really interesting. And if anyone wants this Joy Regenerator for free with an explanatory video, just go to bradchandler.com/joy and you can download it. But it's really interesting how your app is basically what I'm doing, with just a little bit more, like a little bit more research or delving into it, because we all deserve to spend life in a joyous state. And this is what your tool and my tool does. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. I just went to the website. So I can't wait to like hit the final button and like get it, because yeah, that reflect piece is around, okay, what's happening right now? Like what's coming up? What am I feeling? And to your point, Brad, like When we have an argument with a spouse, it's never really about like what we think it is. Like, what are we really debating and fighting about? Like, hopefully we can get to the core of it. So yeah, PBR for me, there was a corporate metric called profit before royalty that I was held accountable to. So that was PBR. And so I found it to be funny that like this old corporate KPI turned into shorthand for my mindfulness and meditation practice. And then certain people in certain areas of the country will know PBR, that acronym, for different reasons. And so people are like, oh, that's funny. Because I would say, hey, I got to grab a PBR. It's a PBR moment. And they're like, oh, yeah, they'll tell me about it. I go, no, it's a different one. It's probably a better tasting and healthier version of what you're thinking about.
Yeah, so this stuff can literally change your life. It can certainly change your relationship and your marriage. And as you have proven out, it will change your career. Like, you use this as a testament to climbing the corporate ladder. You were literally kind of in almost like living in the Matrix, where as the stuff was going around you and swirling like a tornado, I'm sure you weren't perfect, but you weren't swirling like the tornado because you used these breathing exercises. And 3-4 years ago, before I went through my transformation, if we'd have had this talk about breathing, I've been like, that's a waste of time. It's silly. Now, after reading so many books and studying, it is such a huge part of, like you said, I mean, we could spend hours and hours going into the benefits of meditation and breathing because they're absolutely limitless. One of the things I recall of the 50 things that it does is each chromosome has something called a telomere. And a telomere, the length of that telomere says how long you're going to live. People who meditate more, their telomeres grow. And that's just one of, like, again, 50 or 100 benefits. So if you're like I was a couple of years ago, and probably Michael was many years ago, and you're discounting like this breathing and this meditation and mindfulness stuff, you can do that. You can continue doing that. But I promise you, if you embrace this and make this a part of your life, you will start to see some profound changes.
Absolutely, Brad. Like, as we come into the new year, into 2024, there's a little bit more spice to my energy around like, okay, come on. Can we give the whole like, this is soft, this is woo-woo, all those labels, let's give them a break. Like, because the practice of meditation, of mindfulness, dates back 25 to 2700 years ago. So there's a whole bunch of people trying to sell you a hack, like for short-term gains. And a lot of those hacks don't stay around. Like the hack that was the must-have hack in 1997, we're probably not doing it right now, right? But mindfulness and a contemplative practice and slowing things down, to be in the matrix a little bit so you're going slow as everyone else is rushing around. And you can talk to any athlete or any performer, when the game is slower, when the ball seems bigger, they just perform better. So as we come into the new year, going back to what I just said, it's like, I think it's time to give some of these like things a rest, because they're really just ways of putting up armor that prevents us from leaning into the practice. Because we're like, well, I don't know. And I would say, hey, this year, like, try out mindfulness. Like, take 2 minutes and do a 2-minute practice. And if that's all you do, I'm a firm believer, if 8 billion of us took a minute or 2 minutes each day to pause, breathe, reflect, we would have a more peaceful, loving planet. No other way for me to see it. It's like, if we all just slow down just a bit and we're a little bit more thoughtful, and we tapped into what we were feeling so we could show up with more love and kindness and put a better ripple into the world, our relationships would be better, our careers would probably be better, our health would definitely be better. And I think Mother Nature would like us just a little bit more than she's probably digging us right now.
Yeah, so
just saying.
Yeah, speaking of sports, one of the greatest athletes of all time, arguably maybe one of the best, it's always between Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. But Tiger Woods, talk about being in a zone or being in flow, right? He was in flow and zone quite a bit. Well, come to find out after watching his documentary, his father was friends with a hypnotist that taught Tiger Woods how to self-hypnotize himself. So when he was in those zones, he was in a hypnotized state. Hypnosis is no more than meditation and breathing. So this stuff is real. And yeah, it certainly helped him and it helped you. And now it's helping me. So
that's awesome. I love it. I love it. Hey, Michael Jordan, another like GOAT debate, Michael Jordan or LeBron James, right? And what they have in common, they're both meditators.
Yeah. You know,
through Phil Jackson and Chicago Bulls. And then he brought that to the Lakers. I will say this, meditation may not be for everyone because nothing is for everyone, but it's certainly for more people than are currently practicing mindfulness. And my approach to it, it comes from like real world. It comes out of the executive suite. It's relatable. It's practical. It meets you where you're at from a time perspective. And so I understand the pressure of today's entrepreneur and corporate executive and corporate worker. And I really want people to be able to slow down to make really good decisions for their company, for their business, because their work will have a profound impact on the quality of life that we all feel. And so I view mindfulness as a way to do that, to make the planet a bit better and as we make our lives better.
Yeah. So if you live in a triggered state and you want meditation to work, one of the ways it will help even more is if you go and figure out what is that programming from your childhood. And if you're like, yeah, well, maybe I don't have any programming from it. Because if your mind is racing all the time because of your childhood programming, meditation is going to be really tough. So if you're like, my childhood was great, 9.5 out of 10 of my clients start by saying my childhood was great. And I say to myself, it couldn't have been, or you wouldn't be here talking to me as a happiness coach. So if you're one of those people that are like, huh, I wonder if I have childhood programming that's holding me back or keeping me from having an amazing relationship or causing me to drink or eat or smoke too much weed, go take my 3-minute 12 question quiz at bradchandler.com/quiz. And if you can figure out what that childhood programming was, it's going to be a lot easier to meditate and find this peaceful state. One of our listeners just commented that they already went and downloaded your app. So Michael, as we close, tell the listeners, what is it that you do now and how do you help people and how can people reach you?
So thanks, Brad. And yeah, I might take your quiz as well. So everyone should take Brad's quiz. And for the person that just downloaded the app, thank you. And the really cool thing, as we come into the second full year of the app, people can pay what they can, because I don't want any barriers to this. So people can have their first year just be a dollar.
Wow. You know?
So for a dollar, you get a whole year membership to the app. So there's really nothing to lose and a whole bunch to gain. So what I do today, I like to say I help prevent bad moments from turning into a bad day. So because I view my accident as a bad moment, but yeah, right, no more bad days. And so I do that through executive coaching. So I go into companies and help their leaders lead in a very conscious way, a way that's more appropriate for the workplace today, to create cultures that can get things done, but also have a sense of belonging and trust and connection. So that's one way I work with people. And I also go into companies when they want to bring a motivational speaker in to talk about change and resilience and grit and finding a path forward where we can be more productive and happier. People bring me in to coach. And then I have my app. So for folks that I can reach out to people across the world and really help people slow it down a bit, come back to their breath. And know, I'm a big believer that I think we can do hard things. The last 5 years, we've been doing some wicked hard things. And I believe that we travel together. Together we go far, in the spirit of a cycling peloton, that we can do hard things, especially when we travel together, that you out there in the audience, you've got this, and then we've got you. So like, it's that mentality that I bring to our meditation and help people live the lives they really want to live. And I think this is a perfect moment to do that as we come into the new year.
Love it. Love it. I'm going to go download the app as soon as I get off. Where can we reach you and where can we download the app?
So the app can be found at the Apple App Store and Google Play. And then you can find me either on Instagram or LinkedIn, or you can go to my website, which is michaelobryanshift.com or pausebreathereflect.com. Either place you can find out a little bit more about my story and the app and all the goodness to help us, like, yeah, prevent that bad moment from turning into a bad day or even longer.
And the app is Pause, Breathe, Reflect. That's the name of it?
Yeah, simple. All you got to do is pause, breathe. And as soon as you hit the R and the E, you'll see the Pause, Breathe, Reflect logo. And you can download it. Yeah, in the first year, you can pay as little as a dollar to join.
That's really, really generous of you to do that. If you're struggling or suffering in any way, shape, or form, that's not how your life was meant to be, I promise you. There is a better way. So if we can help you, please reach out to us. And Michael, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was so good, Brad. And I love what you're doing and putting into the world. I think it's so important. And I love just your story of being resilient and going through what you've gone through and now coming out on the other side and helping people live better lives. The world's a complicated place. We need more voices like you. So my encouragement, for what it's worth, my encouragement is continue doing what you're doing, because I think the world needs it from everyone, but it also needs it from men, because I think men today, for a variety of different reasons, are struggling with how to show up with where they are in the world. So to be a role model to other men is something that I hope you're really proud of, because you're making an impact that's meaningful. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And if you've enjoyed this show, please like it, subscribe to it, rate it, and review it so that we can help spread this message and make this world a happier place. So until next time, that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. And remember, love does heal all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.